We get it underway by welcoming into the program. Sounds like he's in the great outdoors, going al fresco again this week, writer Colin Fleming.
Bonsoir.
Two things I must say up front. I love the cover of the new book. It looks great. And you look pretty sweet without a hat.
Oh, thank you. My sister's going to appreciate that. I wear the hat to get maximum sweat on my workout. And the cover of the book is very non-sweaty, and I like how it looks, too. I think it came out great.
Excellent. All right, and so we've got a lot to cover this week, and we want to start by talking sports, the NBA, the NHL, trying to find a way to finish their seasons. You think that's a bad idea?
I think it's a very misguided idea. I don't, for a number of reasons. First of all, I don't know how these athletes are going to have the, call it what you will, mental discipline not to violate these kind of bubble setups they have. And to me, you have to essentially commit to players having COVID-19. Now, I don't think that's a big deal. I mean, for all I know, I've had it 7 times. I'm out all the time doing my workouts and whatnot. I always think to myself, I'll be worried when LeBron James gets sick. But these guys get it. Nothing really happens if they're just around each other and not the elderly. But that doesn't seem to be how we're going to handle this. And then I think you have this other issue, to me, is the larger issue. You're not crowning a champion of anything. The seasons, they do not exist anymore. Just thinking about this, it's like 4 or 5 months, whatever it is. That's like 10 years in my career. That's in an athlete's career, that's the equivalent of like 10 years in mine. Mm-hmm. And your body has changed. You don't have the same body anymore. Players who were hurt are now fine. Players who were out for the season are now back. You're not recognizing a champion of a continued season. You're crowning a champion of this weird interregnum island creation. Do you know what I mean? It's like, remember when the Twins were good in 1987? And what you knew when the season started again a few months later is that the Twins weren't going to be good again. Like the Red Sox, 2018, right? A few months passed, they suck. That's just, you're not having an actual season. You have this desperate need to cling to this thing that you need to let go, and the next season is about to start anyway. So just start again.
Doesn't make any sense for Major League Baseball, and I'm still not sure it will actually happen, to try and start up in 10 days.
Baseball, at least, the one thing with baseball is it's so boring, and it takes forever. And just the dog days of August, as they say, but it's really the dog days of April and May and June and July. And then you get to the end, and it's like, okay, there's less dog in these days. So you won't have that component. It's almost like this fluke mechanism that would make baseball more exciting than it usually is, and it could actually benefit from that. But again, you can just let things go in life. There is an art to having the mental discipline to just move on. It's not a big deal if this doesn't happen this year. It's not like the end of anything. It's sport. And you just pick up where you should be picking up anyway.
And there are options out there, including, and you've shared some with me, and I've listened to some on my own too, the incredible number of old live broadcasts of games that are available out on the internet.
Yeah, now we're going to sound like 108 recommending this, but the reason I brought that up with you is because I think there's also a lost art of imagination. And I sent you that link. It was the game from 1972 at the end of the season, kind of unbalanced season, when the Red Sox were eliminated and they lost to the Detroit Tigers, and Ned Martin was doing the call, and it's just him talking for like 2 hours and 47 minutes. And he does these descriptions where he provides descriptions, and then he like kicks it up another level and qualifies the descriptions, so you see that in your head. It's a lot like writing, and it's a lot like reading. And if you have this downtime in sports right now, you're just on autopilot all the time, being fed these games constantly. In bed some night, when you're laying there, and you're just, like, thinking anyway, put on one of these old radio broadcasts on YouTube. Sharpen up your imagination. I think you'll find that when you come back to, like, watching sports, to going to sports, it enhances the effect. As I get older, I'm just less interested in the results of these things. And when I see, like, some old game from whatever year it is, and I don't know the outcome, or even if I do, and I'm looking at the artistic quality of it, it's not any different from watching a game like right now. The two teams playing in the game right now are most likely not going to win the championship. They're just having battle on this day. And it's the same thing when you watch some old game from 1983 and the White Sox and the Orioles, and you don't know what's going to happen, probably. And it meant just as much to those players as these players now. And it's still not even going to have this championship outcome. It's just the spirit of the contest. And I find that's more appealing to me than what the Red Sox did, what the Patriots did. And I'm all about the Red Sox and the Patriots.
When you talk about imagination, you sent me a while back a play-by-play link to, I think it was a 1965 game with the Washington Senators and the Boston Red Sox. And I sat on my back porch listening to that game as if it were actually happening right then. But in terms of imagination, and I couldn't remember all the players. I was a pretty little kid back then. But I remembered enough of them that I was trying to picture their various batting stances each time somebody came to the plate.
It's funny you mention that, because in the game that I just referenced to you, Ned Martin is describing, I think he was one of your favorite players, he was one of my favorite players for a while, too. We would have seen him in different eras, really, was Carl Yastrzemski. And
oh, yeah.
He's describing Yastrzemski's distinctive stance. And again, he gives you the description, but then he goes inside the description. And he qualifies. He's like, chin tight to the shoulder. it's such a writerly move. And you get pulled into the cadences and the rhythms. And the game is moving much faster. And so whether you knew these players or whether you didn't know these players, and there's the historical element. For instance, this game with the Red Sox playing the Tigers in that lost season of 72, Carlton Fisk, my all-time favorite baseball player, is easily the best player in the Red Sox that year. He's their best hitter, too. He's still hitting sixth, which is crazy to me, in this, like, do-or-die type game. And it's like, you can look that up on Baseball Reference if you are just going inside the box scores, but you might not otherwise know that unless you're listening to that broadcast. And then you start to think, huh, maybe if they didn't hit this dude sixth all year, finishing like in the top five in MVP, they're not coming down to this contest against this Tigers team, and they're taking on the Reds, not in 75 for the first time, but in 72, and maybe that would have worked out well.
Well, and I love he's talking about Louis Aparicio, who was at the end of his career then after a number of great seasons, but talking about how bad Louis Aparicio felt about slipping and falling down, going around third the previous day in the game that I would say really cost them a chance at postseason.
And Ned Martin, he sort of judges. He goes after, like, the Detroit, because they're in Detroit for this. They're not in Boston.
Right.
And he's like, they were awfully hard on them here in Detroit in the press. he kind of scolds them, and it's like, and he was this highly articulate guy. I think if you listen to broadcasts like that, and I certainly did, Fred Cusick was Ned Martin was sort of at the end when I was getting into stuff, and Fred Cusick stuck around for a long time, but it informed, it influenced the way I thought about describing things, the way I put together sentences, and ultimately the way I wrote. I think that's why I can, not the only reason, but it's one of the strands as to why I can make things as clear as I do, and also why I speak in unbroken sentences. There's no ums and ahs and you knows. And if you listen to Ned Martin, you listen to Fred Cusick, or a lot of those broadcasters, Ernie Harwell, they speak that way too. There aren't really gaps in their language.
Why Ned Martin remains one of my favorites of all time. Also want to talk, while we're on the subject of sports, about one of the great sports books of all time, The Game by the great Ken Dryden.
Yeah, so I was just mentioning things that you could sort of turn to with an athletic component right now and to have yourself be tided over. And The Game by Ken Dryden is not just one of the great sports books. It's one of the better written books of any kind of book, any 20th century book you're going to see. So you can be like, oh, it's Neanderthal talky. I don't like that stuff. In which case, I'd say to you, there's actually a lot in common between, like, a Beethoven piano sonata and a Wayne Gretzky hockey game in his prime, so you might want to look into that a little bit deeper. But Ken Dryden wrote so well the diary of what was his last season. And Ken Dryden, to me, that famous pose where he's leaning on his goal stick, mm-hmm. right, he's very upright. Don't you think that's the sports version of Rodin's The Thinker? It's like the exact same thing, right?
Now that you mention it, yes.
Yeah, like it's uncanny. And Dryden, he's talking about Guy Lafleur. And Guy Lafleur is one of the best players in the world at this time. And he's describing how Lafleur will shortly be not that good at all. And he's not being like a jerk about it. He's being almost like, he's like Marcel Proust, the way he's talking about time and its ephemerality. And he's exactly right, because Lafleur does fall off a cliff shortly as we get into the 80s. But it's like this book that will change how you look at life and time and memory and competition. And you do not have to care about hockey at all. If you do care about hockey, it's just like hockey porn for you, really. You'll get well into it. And I'd also mention Buster Keaton to you. You're like, what's Buster Keaton have to do with sports? Thinking about this today, you can make an argument that Buster Keaton is the best athlete of the 20th century. He just happened to make movies.
Oh, when you watch the stunts that he did himself during his great run of films, oh my word, it's unbelievable.
It's not just like the danger of the stunts. It's really how balletic he makes them seem. He seems to exert so little effort, and he's like risking life consistently. Mm. And he's just so nimble on his feet. Like if he like ran track or whatever, he would have been like this great track athlete, decorated, all of that. He just happened to make these pictures, and his seamlessness in his athletic maneuvers give his movies a suppleness, a continuity, that just a flow. Again, that whole idea of flow that we're coming back to in these different facets, whether it's Ed Martin or Buster Keaton, and it's just this elegance, this Bobby Orr-like elegance in silent cinema.
And when you talk about Buster Keaton, I don't know, have you seen the Peter Bogdanovich documentary?
Yeah, and I've all of that stuff, anything like Buster Keaton related, I am pretty much all about. I think The General is, and Orson Welles did as well, I think it's probably the finest film ever made in this country, and anything. I've even seen all the sound pictures. And
Well, and I wonder, is it
episode of The Twilight Zone?
Is it safe to compare him perhaps to an athlete who takes that big free agent contract after, and I think of somebody, well, it wasn't a free agent contract, it was bad management, but Fred Lynn leaving the Red Sox, where I think had he stayed in Fenway, he would have been a Hall of Famer. Buster Keaton signs with the studio, gives up some of his control over his films, and never really achieved the same level of success.
He didn't, and I think Lynn, to begin with that, had a chance because he had that classic left-hander Fenway Park swing. But Keaton's real problem, besides some business decisions, but what it was going to do him in was the advent of sound. And you see it in Singing in the Rain, where some actors just couldn't make the jump. And I wrote a feature once for the American Interest, and it was about Keaton's talkie shorts in the 1930s. His voice, you've heard his voice, right?
Oh, yes.
It's just not a voice that's going to work. It's like he has just gargled with a fistful of rocks. It's not a smooth sounding. The voice is not what you'd expect from watching the man's actual move. So I think that was one of, he wasn't like Laurel and Hardy. Laurel and Hardy made brilliant silent pictures, artful silent pictures. And in fact, some people thought like that was their apex. But then they hop into sound and they're able to transition and do the music box and block it, all of these, and actually lots of remakes of their silent pictures. But their voices worked for that, both of their voices actually. Whereas Keaton, it just wasn't going to fly.
While you're looking for sports alternatives, as we celebrate the 100th anniversary, it would not be a bad investment to spend some time learning more about Negro League baseball, and especially Satchel Paige, who, yes, he's in the Hall of Fame, but still, I don't believe, gets the recognition he deserves.
You mentioned the Red Sox game in 1965 earlier in this conversation, and that is the year that Satchel Paige, and what is it? He's like 59, right?
Yes.
He's going to face the Red Sox. And the Red Sox back then were a lot like the Red Sox really up until 2004. They hit a lot and they didn't pitch very well, but they could always mash. That's just been a staple like that they've always had, going back to the 40s, whenever it was. He comes in, he pitches three innings. He's 59 years old. He gives up a hit. The hit's to Carl Yastrzemski. It's like a double, I think. But he's like just mowing these guys down. He enters the league in his 40s. He helps the team win the World Series. He, for all of his time in the major leagues, he was like the oldest guy in the league, but like over multiple decades. Very strange. He was still that dominant. Can you imagine what he would have been like at 19 if he was 27? And think about like the best pitchers ever. And like, really, there are only four or five guys you can make a case for. Christy Mathewson, Walter Johnson, Roger Clemens is in there. Lefty Grove is in there. But I don't know, man. You look at some of the Satchel Paige stuff that he's doing when he's like the baseball equivalent of 140. it's mind-boggling.
All right, I have to bring this up. You're not ashamed of it at all, nor do I think you should be, but let's give you a little bit, just a little bit of 1980, Christopher Cross and Sailor. Already more mellow just listening.
It's not far down to paradise, at least it's not for me. If the wind is right, you can sail away and find tranquility.
A classic of yacht rock, and you are proudly in the Christopher Cross sailing camp, and I'm with you there all the way.
Well, that makes me judge you unfavorably, which is a little hypocritical on my part. For me, I'm saying this is an allowance. Now you're making me think that you're regularly into this kind of fare, so I have to reevaluate our relationship.
Oh, heavens.
Yes, I am outing myself as a diehard, ardent lover of Christopher Cross's sailing. I almost said that we should make the whole segment about this, but like right at the beginning there, that opening line is not that far down to paradise. He qualifies, at least it's not for me. Boom, bitches! he pulls rank on you. He brags right at the start of his yacht rock tune. I had this buddy in college, and when I met him, he listened to like Air Supply. Like, it was dire. And then I got him into like Oasis and Sam Cooke and Otis Redding and stuff like that. But we both love sailing, and we used to call this soft rock station in the middle of the night in Boston. And we would request, I think the guy's name, the host, David Allen Boucher, maybe still alive. And we would request sailing. This guy would scream bloody murder at us because he thought we were a couple, like, drunk, I don't know, freaks of some kind insisting upon sailing. But this was like, you couldn't just log on to the computer and, like, rock out
right.
Sailing. So, like, we needed our fix. And my friend, he was so worried, he's like, no, really, I'm just into the tomb. It got worse every night. But, like, I love so much about you have the whole painting thing, like Van Gogh. You have the reference to Never Neverland, a little J.M. Barry. And then this, and I guarantee you, this is a first in the history of radio. No one's made this comparison. He mumbles, like, half of the words. You don't even know what he's saying. You'd think that you'd want to enunciate this clearly. I think Christopher Cross was channeling his inner Jimmy Reed, Chicago blues man, who was always bombed out of his mind.
I love it. All right, we got to wrap up, but a couple of things I want to get to. Please tell me about the watermelon devour dude.
Oh, yeah, it's a crazy guy coming down Beacon Street. I walked 20 miles each of the 2 days this past weekend. He was carrying some Mylar balloons, and he was screaming about what he did to this MFing watermelon the night before. I devoured it. I didn't just eat it. I devoured it. It was like he was pumping me up, Kimball. I'm thinking, like, I don't even like watermelon. I want to get some, eat it in a really messy fashion, and then just defeat the bigoted system that is publishing with the watermelon still in my craw.
There you go.
You could hear him for like a mile after. I devoured it. Yes. The implication was, I'll devour you. I love this guy.
Colin Fleming, spitting seeds in the eyes of editors everywhere. And you'd spoken about this earlier, the guy on the tee that got into a very loud hockey discussion.
Yeah, he was a car away, right? So I'm coming back on the tee, and I'm just slathered in sweat. I leave a puddle in the seat. And so it's like I have malaria. You don't want anything to do with me. And I have on my Bruins beanie and my Bruins T-shirt that I just befoul he starts having hockey talk with me from a car way. So now everyone's listening in, like they're listening on the radio, except I'm a drippy, gross dude on the subway. He turned out to be really interesting. He's telling me his whole life story, that he was this oil rigger. He lives, he could be within earshot right now, he lives on a boat in the harbor. Pretty cool, right? And he just talked to everybody who came on, and he just made up facts willy-nilly. He's like, remember when that guy from Providence College was the goalie and they won the cup? What alternative, like, fantasy camp world? Like, who, Chris Terreri? I don't know what the hell he was talking about.
All right, your popsicle addiction, is there a flavor of choice?
You know, it's more of a placebo thing. I get up in the middle of the night, and I go to the refrigerator that just has, like, pooling water all over. This is a kitchen. That's funny. Over what I call a kitchen. And I'll wake up the next day, and there'll be, like, 17 popsicle sticks. I'm like some monster that just devours these bad boys. I'll inhale any popsicle there is. And my sister was telling me that her kids are like, yeah, we're, like, big popsicle fans here. I'm like, oh, put my niece on. Put my nephew on. Maybe we could have, like a club. I'm a lonely guy who likes popsicles a lot.
And finally, do you indeed chant Zulu as you go up and down the steps?
Yeah, I do. I actually do. Like, early on in the running. Now, I realize that maybe somebody would be like, that's racist. You can't do that. Look, man, I don't see skin color. I don't believe in color. I just answered that popsicle question in a color-free way, right? You all heard that. But I do respect the attitude of the Zulu warrior. And if anyone knows me, anyone reads the blog, they know that guy is de facto Zulu. And when you run up and down those stairs 10 times, you have to be a Zulu warrior. So yes, it's Zulu, Zulu, Zulu. You get it.
All right, Colin Fleming, appreciate it. As always, thank you for joining us. And I just hope you don't ever get caught between the moon and New York City.
Yes, same to you, sir.
See you, Colin. Check out Colin's work, colinflemminglit.com.